Hello and welcome to this Nevada caucus results edition of the 538 Politics podcast. I'm Galen Druk. At the time of this recording, Sunday afternoon, about 60% of the precincts in Nevada have reported their results. We won't have a full picture of how second and third place panned out until the remainder of the results come in, but one thing is clear. It was a good showing for Bernie Sanders, who came in an unquestionable first place. At the moment, here's what the delegate tally looks like. 46% for Sanders, 20% for Biden, 15% for Buttigieg, 10% for Warren, 5% for Klobuchar, and 4% for Steyer. We're going to discuss what those results mean, the voting patterns behind them, and what comes next. And here with me from Nevada to discuss are Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. Hey, Nate, how's it going?
It's going well. Thank you, Galen.
How's your luck so far in the casino?
You know, I played a little bit of poker, did really well the first night, and not so well the second and third nights. But so far, the success from the first night outweighs the mediocrity from nights two and three.
Good to hear. And also with us is special guest John Ralston, who is the editor of the Nevada Independent. And if you watched the Democratic debate in Nevada, you also saw that he was one of the moderators. So, hey, John, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing well, but my first question is, Nate, where did you play poker? Because I play a lot.
Oh, shit. So I was at the Bellagio the first two nights, and then at Aria last night.
Yeah, I played Aria a lot. I live just right across the way from Aria, so I can walk there. And so I play there a lot, but I played at Bellagio as well.
I was hoping to play in, the Wynn has like a Winter Poker Classic, a tournament that you could register until 4:45. But of course, we did not really know very much about who actually got what results until right around then. So it didn't work out. But, you know, the cash games are always fun.
Okay.
What do you play? Okay.
Let's just talk about poker. Forget the Nevada.
Okay. So to avoid playing too much into the stereotypes of Nevada, there's obviously more to the state than poker, gambling, casinos, etc. A lot of Nevadans weighed in last night on who they want the Democratic nominee to be. So, John, let's start with you. We have results from 60% of the precincts. Looking at where the results are coming from and what remains, how much do you expect these numbers to change once we have full results?
Well, it's a little bit hard to speculate on that, Gillen. I mean, most of the precincts that are out, just like most of the state, is from Clark County, Las Vegas area. And if those hold, and if the patterns of the first half of the vote in Clark County hold, then Joe Biden is probably going to hold on to second place. And that seems to be a big deal only to Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg, who are arguing about who is the second place finisher. But when you finish, you know, more than 2-1 behind the front runner, that's just for the purposes of spin going into South Carolina and Super Tuesday.
So, Nate, Sanders's average in the Nevada polls leading up to caucus day was 31%. How big of an overperformance were Sanders's results last night?
The polls predict the first instance vote, so who you initially caucus with when you enter the room. And in that number, he's at 33%. So considering there are undecideds, the polls actually did really well. Then you have it.
Okay.
Yeah. So the polls. Yeah. So this is important, right? Bernie did well no matter how you look, but like, I think it went from like 33% of the raw vote to 39 of the vote after reallocations, because he was viable in almost every precinct, to the 40s in county delegates. And so in each version of that count, Bernie did better than the previous one. And so that's important, right? The polls actually were extremely precisely right on. Not every poll individually, but the, you know, one poll had Steyer ahead, right? But like the polling average was quite precisely accurate. And the forecast about reallocation was accurate, but yeah.
So people should not view this as an overperformance by Sanders. This is in line with what was expected going into the Nevada caucuses.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at him being way ahead in the polls anyway, and then you say, okay, well, he is comfortably above 15% and no one else is, and it was quite predictable that he would get up to, you know, 39 or 40% in the second instance. I don't think anyone knew kind of that he would also get a boost from county delegates relative to the realigned vote. We don't try to forecast that. But from a kind of polling or forecast standpoint, then for all the concern about Nevada being hard to poll, then some of these late polls, like the Data for Progress polls that showed Bernie in the mid-30s, that's exactly what actually happened based on the first instance vote, which is what the polls are trying to predict.
All right. So, John, what contributed to Sanders's win? Looking at the entrance polls, what parts of the electorate did he do well with?
He did pretty well with almost all parts of the electorate. And what those entrance polls shows, number one, he's did fantastically well with the Latino voters, was it showed up in polling beforehand and was pretty clear from what was going on the ground. And if you see, look what happened, and I've mentioned this already, but the Hispanic turnout in those caucuses for the Culinary Union, which is heavily Hispanic, which took place mostly on the Strip, Bernie won almost all of those, and that is not insignificant. The second thing, if I recall correctly, and I'm sure if I recall incorrectly, Nate will correct me, is even in the moderate vote, which it's kind of a microcosm of the entire campaign, Bernie did all right with the moderate vote because the rest of it is being split among so many other candidates. And of course, that is why, or at least part of the reason why, Bernie Sanders is the front runner. But there's one other thing, well, actually two other things, if you'll permit me, to why he did well here. Number one, it's been clear from the beginning that the most fervent supporters for any candidate are those of Bernie Sanders' core support. They are not going anywhere, no matter what happens. And so he had that. But he also had this time, as opposed to 2016 when he did well in Nevada, he had a real organization here run by political pros who were able to harness that passion and energy into a formidable turnout machine, both in early voting and, I believe, yesterday. And so that is why he won and did so well across a variety of demographics.
Yeah, looking at the entrance polls, it looked like Sanders was getting about 20% of the moderate vote and the outright majority, I think 53% of the Hispanic vote. He also did decently well with Black voters, you know, still behind Joe Biden, but not by the kind of gap that we saw in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. So looking at Bernie Sanders's coalition broadly now, given that Nevada is more representative of the Democratic Party, it's a bit more diverse. How different does Sanders's coalition look in 2020 from 2016?
Well, the Hispanic portion of it is, I think, the big shift, right? I mean, it's a little bit apples to oranges, because in 2016, Sanders was in a two-way race, and here he's in a however many candidates you want to say are viable race. But clearly, like, the Hispanic vote mostly stuck with Hillary Clinton in most states in 2016. And it's a big advantage for Bernie now, not only here in Nevada, but obviously California and Texas are the two largest Super Tuesday states. So that's quite important. His coalition, I think, actually has become a little bit more liberal. So in this state, he did decently well among moderates. The 20% is kind of more a reflection of the fact that no one else is doing particularly well here. But if anything, it's actually like a more liberal coalition. In New Hampshire, for example, they got much less of the moderate vote. So, you know, it's more racially diverse and it's more liberal. And those two things are working out just fine for him so far, but it does kind of leave a little bit of a room still on kind of the moderate side. I mean, we go back and forth about kind of, you know, what these lanes mean. The thing that kind of transcends for Bernie most of these lanes is age, where if you are a Democrat under the age of 55 or so, then you probably have a good impression of Bernie Sanders, whether you're white, Black, Hispanic, Asian, or other. You may or may not have him as your first choice, but you probably think of him favorably. If you're a senior citizen, then you may not. And Nevada is a relatively young state, which also helped Bernie here.
John, we've mentioned now that Bernie Sanders did well amongst Hispanic voters, and you said that he had a significant turnout operation with political pros on the ground in Nevada. What specifically was the campaign doing? Why did he do so well with Hispanic and Latino voters? And was it a turnout thing where he was just getting people that he already knew who supported him to turn out? Or was he working on persuasion in the Hispanic community and campaigning to them in a way that maybe they hadn't been campaigned to before?
I think it's a little bit of both. His campaign clearly made that a priority. And there have been in-depth pieces written in. I know Dave Weigel at the Washington Post has done a lot of reporting on how Bernie appealed to Latino voters here, and he saw it coming months ago. I know there's a really good piece in the New Yorker about it as well. But that is why the Culinary Union, when they finally decided to speak out, not endorse, but speak out against Bernie by saying he was going to end their health care, even if they had endorsed, I'm not sure how much of a difference they could have made, because he had support within the Culinary Union already with his messaging to the Latino community. And so turning around that big an organization, 60,000 people, just is not that easy. And so Bernie saw that, and so he started early with them. You may recall that in 2008, right after Hillary won New Hampshire, the Culinary Union, the day after that primary, endorsed Barack Obama and made a big show of it, and the Obama campaign made a big deal of it. But Hillary still won Nevada, and she did very well in those caucuses. Now, she won the popular vote because she didn't understand caucuses, and Obama did. He won more delegates. But Bernie knew from his experience in 2016 what he needed to do to get the Hispanic vote. And the Culinary Union is the Hispanic turnout operation inside the Democratic Party. And so they were very strategic in how they behaved this time.
Thinking about turnout more broadly, John, how did turnout this year compare with turnout in past caucuses, given that early voting was an option?
I'm still trying to get that final number. As a matter of fact, I hope to have it before this podcast, and I'm sorry I don't. But here's what it looks like. When they first had their first early state caucus in 2008, they got about just under 118,000, I believe the number was. And 4 years ago, it was 84,000. They didn't have early voting either of those times. They put it in this year, 4 days of it, and they had what I thought was a pretty remarkable turnout, 75,000 or so. And so whatever the final number turns out to be with voting yesterday, it's going to be past 2016. It may get past 2008. Again, I'm not positive which precincts are still outstanding, but there are a lot of them that are still outstanding. And so it looks to me like they will at least eclipse 2016. They may get past 2008, which I don't think anybody thought they were going to do.
And in general, I know caucuses can have weird turnout in that they largely attract the most enthusiastic supporters who are willing to spend 2 hours in a casino ballroom. But is the caucus electorate from yesterday reflective of the Democratic electorate in Nevada, from what you can tell?
It seems to be, or, you know, within the margin of error, and it has been in past caucuses as well. Now, it may be different this time because of the early voting component. I mean, it's really not a pure caucus anymore, right? It's a hybrid. They go in for 4 days, and they just fill out a ballot of ranked choice voting. They have to choose it at least three, and then those results are supposed to be integrated at each precinct, which is why it's taking them so long to count it. I also believe, by the way, that if the race had been close, this would have been a really major issue. But because it was such a blowout for Bernie, and that was obvious from the first results coming in and from the entrance polls, they didn't get into any trouble there. And so now they're just taking their time counting all the results and double checking the pictures of the caucus site sheets. But I have to tell you, I'm pretty sure that this is the last time we're going to see a caucus in Nevada, and maybe anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So could have been an Iowa 2.0 if the race had been tighter. That doesn't bode well for caucuses, as you mentioned. Nate, I want to ask you about what Sanders' chances look like at this point and how this might affect the model. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by Ring. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer. You might already know about their smart video doorbells and cameras that protect millions of people everywhere. Ring helps you stay connected to your home anywhere in the world. So if there's a package delivery or surprise visitor, you'll get an alert and you'll be able to see, hear, and speak to them all from your phone. Listeners can get a special offer on a Ring welcome kit available right now at ring.com/538. That's the numbers, not the letters. The kit includes a video doorbell and a Chime Pro, which is just what you need to start building a ring of security around your home today. Go to ring.com/538. Again, that's ring.com/538. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Upstart. Getting into debt is easy, but getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. And the best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. See why Upstart is top ranked in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/politics to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. Again, that's upstart.com/politics. All right, we're back. And Nate, how do Sanders' chances look at this point for winning the majority of delegates now that we've input the Nevada results into our primary forecast?
So we have both Nevada results and we had some further polling that came in overnight. We finally got some more post-debate polls from YouGov and other people. So Sanders is clearly by far the most likely Democrat to win a majority. We have him with almost a 50% chance, so 46%. And most of the non-Sanderses win, there's no majority. It's a 40% chance still. So if you look at a plurality, because there could be a case where Bernie gets 45% of delegates, no one else is close, you would think he'd be nominated in that instance. So he has a 69% chance of getting a plurality of delegates. So he's really in the driver's seat. I would use the phrase that it's his nomination to lose. It's both because of his strength and because of the, frankly, weakness of any of the alternatives. Biden actually was helped a tiny bit by the goings-on in the past 24 hours. He did beat his polls by a couple of points here in Nevada. There was a South Carolina poll that came out that showed him still leading there after the debate. And so, you know, he's the one who could still, if he wins South Carolina, then this starts to look like a competitive race again. Competitive doesn't mean it's 50-50. You'd probably still rather be Bernie. But he does have this path. If he wins South Carolina, then we kind of maybe get the kind of Sanders versus Biden showdown that some of us thought we might get all along. Meanwhile, Bloomberg has not been polling well in post-debate polls. His odds have fallen. Warren actually has been polling okay after the debate, but there's not a ton of data yet. But for anyone except for Sanders and then Biden and maybe Bloomberg, I mean, everyone else has like a lot of work left to do. And frankly, for anyone not named Sanders, it would be at this point like an upset for them to win the majority. Plurality is more in play. It could get messy. You know, we do need to keep in mind that like these three states that we had so far, as South Carolina also, they all have their curious elements, right? Where Nevada is a kind of caucus or caucus primary hybrid. Turnout, although up from past years, is still relatively low as a portion of the state overall. So, you know, you see kind of fluky results that may or may not prove to be indicative of broader trends. But so far, we've seen across these three different environments, we've seen Bernie perform well and no one else be quite so consistent.
When we talk about the trajectory of the primary so far, in large part, we're talking about momentum because the actual delegate totals based on the three contests so far are minimal, right? They're not going to really help you win the nomination. Does it seem at this point that Sanders is kind of building from Iowa to New Hampshire to Nevada, and that could now make him competitive in South Carolina? Like, does it seem like with each contest, he's gaining more and more support? Or, like you mentioned, is Nevada more fluky because it is a caucus and his strongest supporters are showing up while maybe people who would have voted for Biden in a primary are staying home?
We don't know. I mean, you can't really extrapolate a trend line from three data points. I thought his performance in New Hampshire was not particularly impressive, given that he's from a neighboring state and got, what, 25 or 26% of the vote. So this is like the first performance that like that is really kind of deeply impressive by Bernie because of the breadth and the margins of what he did here. Whereas Iowa, I mean, we still don't know who officially won the delegate count in Iowa, by the way. Iowa and New Hampshire, that was more like, okay, this is kind of the traditional parts of the Bernie coalition. He's in the mid-20s. No one else could reach the mid-20s except maybe Mayor Pete. I mean, I don't think the results were all that great, but this result is a great result for Bernie in the most diverse state so far. But we don't know, right? You know, in South Carolina, he is kind of now polling in the low 20s. The question is, like, would that be enough to win I think probably not. It seems like, you know, Biden does seem to have at the very least like a little bit of a floor that he's found. And so I think, you know, but we'll see. I mean, in theory, Sanders will get a further bounce from winning Nevada and being in the kind of national conversation as a winner. And so that could boost him, you know. Subjectively, I think South Carolina is likely to be one of the five worst states for him on the map. Not just because of African Americans. He does well with some African American voters, but like, you know, older, more moderate, more conservative white voters, it tends to be a fairly pro-establishment state, right? We remember, for example, Clinton winning by a big margin in South Carolina in 16, bigger than the polls forecasted, actually. And so, you know, I don't want to, like, throw any cold water on, like, Sanders' performance, but I think there is always, like, the danger of overreacting to one event, right? And that's what the model shows. That's what the model's like, okay, two things we can say. Certainly, Bernie is way more likely than anyone else to win a majority. You know, however, number two, there is still a pathway where this kind of stays quite messy and where there's no majority. And a path where Joe Biden wins South Carolina is maybe puts us back on that no majority path.
I want to ask Nate a question because I'm a little bit, I'm not sure which argument I buy, but I do think there's another argument. And you mentioned you thought that Bernie's performance in New Hampshire was not that impressive. And I guess the counter argument to that, which I guess I lean towards, is this isn't like 2016 when there was a clear contrast between himself and Hillary and he crushed her. And now you have, you know, four or five other fairly robust campaigns going against him. And he still managed to pull it out. I know he's a neighboring senator. Do you give any credence to that at all, the comparison?
Well, I think I'm not comparing versus 2016, but I do think that the neighboring state thing matters quite a bit. You can model that out, and being from a neighboring state probably is worth 5 or 6 or 7 points or something like that. And so, you know, if Bernie Sanders is from Connecticut and not Vermont, I'm not sure if he does as well in Western New Hampshire. I'm not sure if he wins the state, right? He also may have been lucky in New Hampshire that Mayor Pete had some of his debate bounce stolen by Klobuchar, who have kind of very similar overlapping voters. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying, right? We were 1.5% of the vote away, maybe, you know, one bad Amy Klobuchar debate away from a narrative where, oh, now Bernie is 0 for 2 in his first two states, right? Of course, you know, I think that by the popular vote metric, he won Iowa. But, like, these are pretty thin margins in the first two states. And so I think the big robust win is pretty meaningful here. But like I said, like I'm just trying to, there's a 50-50 chance, roughly speaking, that when we're having this conversation a week from now, that Joe Biden will have won South Carolina. And now we're having all these conversations about, oh, well, now there are new doubts about Bernie, right? So I'm just trying to get like a little bit ahead of the game and say, no other Democrat can be remotely happy with the hand they have to play here. But it is still pretty early. And we don't yet know kind of how this will translate to other states.
Yeah, I do think that though what Galen said at the beginning of this part of the conversation about delegates not being as important in these early states is absolutely right. I've always believed that. And the narrative either that is real or constructed by the media covering it, the about momentum and how many tickets are gained out of Iowa and then New Hampshire and then Nevada. And because Iowa was so muddled this time, I think that that calculus maybe changed a little bit. Maybe Iowa wasn't that important. But Bernie Sanders clearly has momentum built up over the first three states going into South Carolina. And Biden has lost so much ground in South Carolina that I don't think it's unreasonable to believe that Bernie could win in South Carolina. There's still two more, speaking of data points, to come, which is what happens in the debate this week that could affect the polling. And if Clyburn is going to endorse on Wednesday morning, might he be waiting to see if Biden does right in that debate to move forward with an endorsement or not? And both those things could have an impact on the polls in South Carolina. And I think if Bernie, I don't need a Nate Silver model to tell me that if Bernie wins South Carolina, that he is going to be the prohibitive favorite for the nomination and maybe even a favorite to get a majority of delegates.
Oh, yeah. If he wins South Carolina, he would be a very heavy favorite, I'm pretty sure, in our model. But, you know, but we're actually, so our model is actually trying to account for momentum that he gets, right? It's saying right now that Bernie is behind in South Carolina. However, it predicts that he'll get momentum from Nevada, and therefore it makes it more or less a toss-up. It has Biden with a 47% chance, Bernie at 43%, and I think the rest is mostly Tom Steyer, who we haven't talked about yet, who is still kind of close in the South Carolina polls. So I'm saying, like, this forecast we have for Bernie accounts for Nevada momentum, in theory. Maybe it overweights it, maybe it underweights it, maybe it misweights it. You know, I don't know, right? But we're plugging in the fact that it's this big win, and that usually you get a boost in national polls and in the polls in the next states when that happens.
Yeah. So, John, you mentioned actually that another data point between now and when South Carolina votes is the possibility that the majority whip, James Clyburn from South Carolina, endorses somebody. And I'll mention as a preview that we're going to be talking to Clyburn this coming week. So we'll see what he has to say about that. You know, Nate, you said that no other Democrat is looking at the hand that they have right now and is particularly happy. So while we're talking about the Nevada results, I do want to mention the other candidates and talk about what hand they are actually looking at. John, who made up Biden and Buttigieg's coalitions, the two people kind of vying for second at this point?
They're clearly vying for some of the same voters, and that's a big problem for them. And that's why Mayor Pete's campaign just sent a letter to the state Democratic Party here raising questions about the results. It's why Biden, for 2 days going into the caucus, raised questions about whether they were going to be valid or not. They're playing for the same voters. They're playing for the same kind of momentum. If Mayor Pete were to finish in second here when all is said and done, and I think that's relatively unlikely, but it's possible, then he will be able to say, look, at the first three states, it's Bernie and me, 1-2, and that's who you should be talking about. As Nate pointed out earlier, if Biden gets second here, even though it's a distant second that no one should brag about, he will, of course, brag about it and use that as try to get momentum to hold on in South Carolina. And then Super Tuesday could change the dynamic because there are so many states voting and so many delegates in play. And so the biggest problem for all the other Democrats is that Bernie has his X number of percent and the rest are vying to cut up the remaining pie. And that's just a problem. And that is why I think the attacks are going to be even sharper between Biden and Buttigieg in the debate this week. And listen, Warren's campaign now is trying to paint her as the comeback kid as opposed to Biden, saying a lot of what she did during that debate did not show up in the caucuses because 75,000 people had already voted. And they're even putting out anecdotal evidence that people who showed up yesterday were talking about how they're sorry that she wasn't viable in their precinct because they were so excited about her. So I do think that the debate could have an impact again, but it also might not, depending on what happens then, right?
Yeah, Nate, you said the night of the debate that you disagreed that early voting would prevent Warren from reaping the benefits of her strong debate because early voters were generally the kind of people who had already made up their minds and so weren't going to be the kind of late deciders who would go for Warren. Warren did do, it looks like, better on caucus day than she did with early voters. Do you think there is any sense that early voting prevented Warren from reaping some of the benefits of her strong debate?
Well, I mean, any is a low bar to clear. You know, I'm sure these things are true in part, right? But in the entrance poll, she got, I think, 17% of voters who decided in the last few days, which is better than the 13% she has overall, but not a ton better, right? You know, I went to a Warren rally the night before the caucus. It was a nice event. By the way, events are outdoors here, which is kind of fun compared to New Hampshire. But they had, like, maybe 500 people, and they all kind of looked like, to stereotype, they looked like they were kind of Warren devotees and not kind of undecided voters who were kind of shopping around at the last minute. So I don't know. I mean, clearly the early vote's a big deal here. There is some evidence of a small to medium-sized Warren bounce in national polls, but I don't know, right? It's not like, because we've seen cases where, like, you know, I remember, what was it, like Louisiana or something, where it was like Ted Cruz against Trump, and like for some reason Ted Cruz really lost the early vote big and then dominated the election day vote. And you can see that, right? It's like every time you got an election day batch of votes, then Ted Cruz would gain. And you didn't see anything like that here, right? You saw Warren doing marginally better. I mean, the problem is, like, you know, you have to get 15% to get delegates. And she is in our polling average now at about 13% nationally. And so, you know, if she were to gain another 2 or 3 points nationally, that would help her a lot. And that would also contribute to like a potential no majority scenario where now all of a sudden you have a crowded progressive lane, so to speak. But I don't know. I mean, like, there's something about Warren, and it may be that voters are frankly afraid to have a woman nominee 4 years after Hillary Clinton. But there's something about Warren where, like, voters really like her. She has, I think, the highest favorability ratings in the Democratic field, and more voters say they're considering her than any other candidate, maybe tied with Sanders now. But it doesn't seem to translate so much into having her be their first choice. And, you know, I would think that they would view these results with qualifications, but as being disappointing on balance.
Do we expect, coming out of Nevada, that any of the candidates will drop out?
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
especially because Steyer is polling so well in South Carolina, especially because I think billionaires live in a different world than the rest of us and see the world differently and wouldn't surrender as fast as others might. And Klobuchar certainly is, even though she had a bad time here in Nevada, certainly has enough money based on the bump she got in New Hampshire to carry on for a while. And so it doesn't seem to me that's going to happen at all.
Yeah, I mean, I would think there are a lot of people that should think about dropping out. It's not really my place to tell candidates to drop out. You know, I thought that Steyer's performance here will wind up in fifth or sixth place was quite disappointing. And one thing you do notice being out here is, like, he is a pretty big presence. He's on a lot of billboards. He has volunteers. He's on a lot of commercials, right? So, you know, it's almost like a little laboratory of, like, a mini Bloomberg or something almost. And that did not translate into very many votes. He got 9% of the initial vote and only 4% of the delegates, the county delegates, I should say. So I don't really know what he thinks his path is. I mean, I guess he could win South Carolina. He's not that far behind there. I don't know kind of quite what that gets him. He does not have a national campaign like Bloomberg does. You know, I think Amy Klobuchar now has a fifth place in a neighboring state, a third place in the fifth place. And she tends to get very favorable media attention, but I'm not sure what her path is either, right? I mean, she is in North Dakota today or something, right? And okay, so let's say you win Minnesota and North Dakota. You know, okay, last I checked, that does not get you a majority of delegates or very many at all, really. But people seem like they want to stay in this thing. I think, you know, the fact that now fundraising is so much more grassroots for everyone except for Biden, I guess. You know, Warren has raised a ton of money in the past 7 days. Klobuchar actually raised quite a bit of money after New Hampshire. And so it's like no longer like the spigot can be choked off if you're not performing, right? If you have loyal donors who feel like you're an underdog, then you can at least kind of keep the campaign going. And so we may not see anybody drop out until post-Super Tuesday.
Yeah. If some of these candidates were to drop out, how much would that affect Biden's odds, Nate?
Well, the math is complicated because the question is, who does the vote go to, number one? And number two, how does it affect which candidates get above or below 15% of the vote, right? You know, if Mayor Pete, I don't think Mayor Pete's going to drop out. He's probably had, after Bernie, the best finishes so far, right? But, like, let's say that Bloomberg were to drop out. Bloomberg's like, you know what, actually, this is kind of embarrassing that we're going to invest all this money and not get that many delegates. Our internal polls aren't good, so let's drop out, right? That would help Biden stay above 15%. In almost all states and districts. It might help Mayor Pete actually get above 15%. So, you know, that might actually be damaging to Sanders, right? But there are a lot of complicated permutations, you know. The more people stay below 15%, the better off for Bernie, because as I think people on this program will know, is like, you have to get 15% to get state or district delegates. So right now you have a big pileup of candidates near 15%. But not necessarily comfortably above it. Like, that's a good result for Bernie because he can therefore often have states where there's only one or two people, with him being one of the two who will get a large bulk of delegates. And so right now things are setting up pretty optimally for Senator Sanders.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap things up. But before we go, John, I just want to ask you, since you are based out of Nevada, looking ahead to the general election just momentarily, when the candidates left Iowa, there was a lot of commentary saying, okay, they left and they won't be back. This state is not in play in the fall. And, you know, who knows whether or not that's true. But do you expect the candidates to be campaigning heavily in Nevada come the fall? What do things look like from a more general election perspective?
Well, you know, Nevada is becoming bluer and bluer all the time. Obama won here twice, and Hillary won here as well. And the state, even in the off year 2018, the Democrats absolutely dominated, and now they hold all the major offices in the state, save one, two U.S. senators. And so it looks like a bluer and bluer state. The Democrats are continuing to out-register the Republicans and extend their voter registration lead. And that doesn't even include the 10,000 new registrants they got through the caucus process. That's just in early voting. I don't know how many they got yesterday. So it doesn't seem like a good place for the Trump campaign to be spending many resources, except that we're kind of a cheap date. Because of how the state is, there's only, essentially only two media markets, and he is now doing all these feints, such as there's a big issue here about nuclear waste disposal. He suddenly got interested in that and said he's against it after putting it in his budget twice. I bet he couldn't answer three questions about it, although I would love to ask him. But so I think that their premise is that if Bernie is the nominee, that states like Nevada come into play, and that may be true. But I still think even with the atmospherics being what they think they will be with Bernie as the nominee, I still think Nevada is going to lean blue.
All right. Well, let's leave things there. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it.
And thank you, Nate.
Definitely. Thank you, Galen. And thank you, John.
All right. Well, the two of you can get back to poker and enjoy the rest of your weekends. And before we go, let me just lay out our plans for the coming days. We are not going to have a podcast out on Monday as we have the Sunday podcast, but we will have another podcast out on Tuesday about the South Carolina primary debate. So check back in with us soon. Until then, my name is Galen Druk. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.